You are listening to. First Gen Teachers Lens.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of First Gen Teacher Lens. In this episode, I talk with Dahlia Rivera about anti-bullying within the Latinx community. Now, this hit home for me because, you know, I'm Latinx, right? So we talk about cultural misconceptions, general misconceptions that happen within the Latinx community, and Dahlia talks about how she mentors and coaches parents through that as well as children. I hope you like this episode. Don't forget to like and subscribe to wherever First Gen Teacher Lens podcast is streaming. And as always, stay tuned. Peace.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of First Gen Teacher Lens. Today, we have a great guest. Her name is Dahlia Rivera, and she's going to talk about, we're going to talk about anti-bullying in the Latinx community. Dahlia, if you could introduce yourself.
Thank you for having me, Alex. So I live in Maryland right now. I am Nicaraguense. I came to the U.S. at the age of 7. So I dealt with bullying pretty much right away as soon as I started school. And, you know, when you're going through it, you don't really understand why it's happening or how it's going to affect you at the current moment or later. And it's funny that I ended up becoming an anti-bullying coach and educator because I mean, it's just not one of the things I ever, you know, thought about mm-hmm. becoming. And it happened due to personal reasons as an adult, too. The thing that actually catapulted me into diving into researching about bullying was when my baby was bullied when she started school. Mm-hmm. You know, kids get so excited and they're like, I want to get on the bus. I want to go to school. So she was all hyped up about that. And she was a very vibrant, confident child. So mm-hmm. I never thought it would happen to her because, you know, what you hear about is the weak looking kids, the shy kids, the timid kids, they get bullied. But in this situation, it had everything to do with the beliefs of stereotypes about others.
Gotcha.
And nothing about confidence in that at the moment. So it was pretty much a little boy who was being bullied by his two older brothers were telling him to hurt other people, to show his manhood at the age of 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it was terrible, but that's what I do. I started sharing the information with parents, schools, and then one day my husband years later was like, you need to start charging for this because this is a lot of work you've done, you know, a lot of research, and I still stay up to date with stuff. So my mission is to go out and help as many adults. So that's one of the misconceptions that people think, oh, you teach kids. I'm like, well, not directly. Mm-hmm. I teach the parents because after so many years of volunteering at my kids' school and other of my friends' kids' schools, I see the need to help teachers with this. I see how overextended they are and how frustrated. And I see teachers reaching out to their administrators just to be told, well, we don't have time for that right now. Or, you know, we just don't have somebody to run the program, or we don't have the funds for that. Or some administrators even say, well, that's not a big problem here at this school.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not worry about it until we have to worry about it.
Right. Like, and that was one of my first questions, like, what made you actually become an anti-bullying educator, right? And I feel like oftentimes we're thrusted into these issues because we're in the thick of it, right? And then mm-hmm. by that time that comes, it's too little too late for like certain kids where like there are seeped into this bullying issue that unfortunately like it has dire circumstances for certain kids. And then, you know, we're seeing that not only seep through more now with technology, and like I feel like it's very ramped up in terms of you know, cyberbullying is a big issue. I know that started when I was in school, where we were on the cusp of AOL, Instant Messenger, AIM, this is a throwback, and like dial up, and you know, all that stuff. We were kind of on the cusp of like social media with like MySpace, and I did not have MySpace though. But in terms of that, what are some clear indicators of bullying, given that there are multiple layers of it nowadays?
So indicators to, you know, identify if your child is being bullied, it's usually the mood swings or the sudden disinterest of wanting to hang out with certain kids or to go to school or to hang out at certain places where they used to. There's reason to question, like, what's going on? Or, for example, if they're being cyberbullied, if suddenly they lose interest in being on the phone or checking their email or just, you know, all of the things that they normally do, there's a reason there to ask, hey, what's going on? And if they're jolty, like, oh, you know, oh my God, this, you know, you can see paranoia if the phone rings or they get a text message. You definitely got to ask, because kids will not say anything for a long time because, number one, they feel embarrassed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they also blame themselves. They were like, oh, I shouldn't have talked to my friend like that or to so-and-so like that. That's why they're doing this to me and I deserve it. And that's so far from the truth. Also physical changes. Some kids, like I remember when I was being bullied when I was little, I had these horrible stomach pains and it was my nerves and I didn't know that, right? Mm-hmm. When you're little, you're just, all you say is, oh, my stomach hurts. But what does that mean to a parent or an adult? You know, it's like, yeah, everybody's stomach has hurt at one point or another, you know, but these were really intense, like crampy, horrible, stomach pains that they were like sharp. And then many years later, I remember having those same feelings, but and also my chest hurt too. And because I was being bullied at work, I was in the army for 10 years. So I dealt with a lot of conflict and things mm-hmm. like that. And I realized it was symptoms of mini panic attacks and also anxiety. So any signs of anxiety, panic attacks, any physical things that are going with them suddenly, you know, you should ask what's going on. And when you ask, it's really important to use open-ended questions like, you know, what was the most annoying thing that happened to you today? Because when you ask them like that, they can't say, oh, everything was fine, or oh, yes or no, you know. Right. You gotta help them articulate. And I mean, there's so many more clues that I can give you, because bullying, most bullying happens very under the table. Mm-hmm. It's not that black and blue eye or yeah. those bruises on your body, because that's too obvious.
Right.
And by the way, when it's very obvious like that, that's when the schools kind of jump in and start doing something, because that means liabilities to them, you know, that right. means, you know, lawsuit or something. It makes them look bad, and administrators care about their reputation. So yeah, these signs are just, you know, your child. And mm-hmm. if your child is acting weird, yeah, it could be a mood swing. But if you're not actually speaking with them and listening more than you're speaking, then you might miss the clues.
Right, right. And then, you know, this makes me think of what you talked about. Lastly, before, you know, schools only step in when there are those visible signals or even, you know, viable threats to the institution, right? So like, you know, there's a loss of funds, there's a potential lawsuit. And this reminds you of a case that hit close to home where the parents were the bullies to the child. And then the biological mother was like stepping in and, you know, she's discussing that. And then it was too late. It was too late. Like the kid already was deep into this cycle of abuse. And it became a huge story, but like, you know, too little too late. We need to have preventative measures so that these kind of like, you know, ultimatum finite decisions or, you know, accounts are not there. We need to step in, right, and kind of mediate that. Mm-hmm. In terms, but like you said before, schools often step in when their backs are on the wall in terms of like, you know, particularly losing money.
Particularly
losing money.
And, you know, doing this work, I talked to a lot of people. Some of them have been attorneys, personal injury attorneys, mm-hmm. who specialize in bullying cases. And one thing that they all tell me is that some cases that are very severe and are totally doable will get turned down because the states each have a cap on how much you can settle on that case. So, for example, one of them, they kept out at $35,000. So if that case is, you know, it's really solid, but it's going to take a long time, but then they do the investment to profit ratio, then the lawyers will say, well, yeah, you'll win, but this is going to take this long. And this is, you know, how long it's going to take. And it's really, there's no money in it for us because we still got to get paid. Right. So It's really sad to get to that point. And so I created the Diversity and Anti-Bullying Academy to help parents, but because I realized there's two things going on, okay? Parents have a mentality of them versus us with the school.
Yeah.
Which is totally wrong because the majority of schools and the administrators and the teachers care so much about the kids. They really do. The problem is that on all sides, there's not enough knowledge. You know, there's no in-depth education about bullying. The teachers have access to it, but there's no time to go over it, right? You have a lot of professional development going on. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of teaching time you have to meet. And so where do you fit that in? So I created a Diversity and Anti-Bullying Academy because I know that there are people out there who want to invest in themselves. There are teachers who have taken my courses or my workshops and they like it because it's very different than what they would get at schools because everything's rushed. Everything's like, oh, okay, we're going to do this today and check off the block and move on. And then the parents have no idea where to begin. Mm-hmm. So then I say, okay, let's start with the very, very basics. How do you define bullying? And a lot of them don't really know how to, they give me the definition of teasing instead. And that right there is a huge, huge sign mm-hmm. that we need. That's why kids are not understanding it. If the parents can't have a conversation and give them a clear understanding of what bullying really is, then how do you expect children to identify it in order to be able to prevent being targeted?
Right.
There's another point I want to point out about our Latinx community. I have been to some organizations and they're like, where our Latino parents are not really that interested in that. I'm like, I don't know, because the majority of my clients have been Latinos. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I provide everything in English. I mean, and in Spanish, in both languages, all of the materials, the workshops. And I love that because, man, our parents, they come to me and they share their stories, not just about bullying, like school bullying that we know of, but racial bullying too. Mm-hmm. And so that's been coming up a lot lately, especially because, you know, the atmosphere of our nation.
Right.
And how we have been depicted. So that's a whole nother, I mean, that's another conversation, but that's needed
Right.
I think that schools are scared to teach about racial bullying because it's that a little too taboo, a little too like, I don't want it to get political, and which it can. But I think if you know how to do it, you know, if you know how to run a workshop like that to teach what racial bullying is versus other forms of bullying, then you can definitely be very effective and help your community by understanding what it looks like and how to react to it in a positive way so that you can deflect the situation. Mm-hmm. And so that you can also, stop it. Because, I mean, you're going to have people that are never going to stop. But then most bullying, once you do something about it, simple things, like, for example, if you just call it out and say, hey, stop it, that's bullying, within 15 seconds, most bullying will stop. 15 seconds.
Right.
And the other thing, too, is people don't know how to do it. So I just say, hey, stop it, that's bullying. Instead of saying, hey, stop it, you're being a bully. So one is targeting the person exhibiting the behavior, you're accusing them, which right. can get personal. And they retaliate. But when you call out the action instead of the person, then you get better results. So that's the type of stuff that I constantly teach parents and, you know, adults.
Right. It doesn't become a defense thing. It's a mechanism where, oh, I'm being targeted. It's more so like targeting the action, like you were exactly. saying, of bullying. So there's I didn't realize that there's a finite distinction between the two, because, yeah. you know, oftentimes you're right. And especially in New York City, we are inundated not only with like professional development, but our classrooms are overcrowded.
Mm-hmm.
I know the DOA probably wouldn't like me saying that, but it's true. Like, so it's like, thank God I have a co-taught classroom, because I don't know how I manage like 1 to 30 kids by myself. Mm-hmm. But you're right. In a day-to-day basis, like some of these issues are the last things on my mind, because we're inundated, as I said mm-hmm. before, with like, all right, we just got a new curriculum. How are we going to tie this new curriculum to Common Core standards? How are we going to tie them to New York State Next Gen standards? So all these little kind of cogs in the machine, right, are always in the back of my mind. And then, you know, I do my best to hold students accountable, but I think that we can always do more. There's always teachable moments. There's always information to be digested, especially within this issue, and particularly in the Latinx community, right? There are these underlying stigmas that like I and my parents have, and like, you know, are slowly coming to realize like that's not okay. Mm-hmm. So my next question is like, what are some stigmas that you notice like teaching your Latinx clientele? What are some stigmas in the Latinx community that hinder anti-bullying practices?
So the biggest one is this thing that we do as Latinos. We tell, well, I don't do this to my kids because it was done to me, but I remember my father, he would say, you better not come home whooped. You know, so like, don't lose the fight. So then that made me believe, oh, okay, if I lose the fight, I can't come to you for help. Uh-huh. So guess what kids do? They never tell, because something happened and they feel humiliated and like they lost. Even if it's not a fight, even if it was just a verbal attack, that child now knows not to come to the parent, because in our culture, we say, no te vengas aquí, you know, like llorando, don't come here crying, you know, porque si no te voy a dar una, you know? And so kids, they don't report. There's only 30% of victims who report, and that's really low. And one of three children, there's different studies. One says one of three children in a classroom are bullied. Others show one of five, still very low numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, the stigma is, if you talk about it, then you're gonna embarrass yourself. You're gonna embarrass a family. Like, don't talk about that. You know, no andes diciendo eso. Like, everybody's gonna know. That everybody's gonna find out. And that's a really ridiculous mentality, because not talking about it is letting that person get away with what they did. The right. one that should be looked as like, oh my gosh, that was dishonorable, should be the person who did it. And let me just say this, don't shame the person exhibiting the bullying behavior, because that doesn't help anything. You're just pretty much being a bully back if you're shaming that person. Mm-hmm. What needs to happen is teach that person, hey, your actions were wrong. And there's also, you mentioned the parent bullying their own kids. And that's one thing that happens in our community, where sometimes we bully our own children by saying things that we culturally we've been taught. For example, I remember for a long time, one of my siblings, she was a little chubby, and like, not like, looking back now, like, she wasn't even chubby. It's just all of us were so darn skinny that she was the only one that had more meat on her. And I remember my parents used to call her gordita, you know.
Uh-huh, yeah. Daddy. Yeah.
So then years later, she said, you know, I know it was meant to be a term of endearment, but even after I kept asking you all to stop, I started internalizing that I was that person, that fat person. And so while our family members, and I have so much resistance against this, because they're like, no, because it came from a good place. Well, yeah, but once you've been told not to anymore, because it makes them feel bad, and you continue, now you're bullying, whether you want to believe it or not, because now the receiver has relayed to you that is not wanted, which is one of the parts of the definition of bullying.
Right.
Unwanted aggressive behaviors, consistency or the potential to be consistent, feeling of unsafety or feeling of, you know, like negative feelings about yourself, all of that. And the stigma too about providing our Latinx community this type of education is that we don't care. It's like, oh, they never show up to parent-teacher conferences, so why? And it's not realized. It's not that they don't want to. Nuestra gente, we have to fight and like work like hell. You know, some people during COVID, mostly Latinos or other minorities, would not go get their darn shot because they were afraid of being fired from their jobs, because they usually work at those jobs where the bosses are not that flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And their jobs don't even pay that much. So they were risking like, okay, I'm going to stay at my job instead of going to get that COVID shot because I need the money so I can feed my kids. So it's not that they don't want to go take and get that shot. It's because they don't want to lose their jobs. And the same thing applies when it comes to parent involvement at some school. Sometimes it's more about survival than to go and talk to that teacher.
Right.
You know,
right. A lot of there's this notion, you know, hay que trabajar, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's always like, you gotta put in that work, because then a lot of most Latinx population is not like, have blue collar jobs where, mm-hmm. like, they're either working in, you know, construction, like my family's filled with construction workers, and like, it's like, you know, I gotta go finish this kitchen so I can get food on the table, my kids can get, you know, the essentials, you know, whatever they need for school, clothes, right? So that is internalized in the back of your mind. And then, you know, like, all these are arduous jobs. Like, yeah. Most of the Latinx population has the most laborious jobs, where you come back, parent-teacher conferences at what, 6, 5, mm-hmm. from 5 to 8, and yeah. you're physically and probably mentally exhausted.
Yeah.
That's why,
yeah, feed the yeah. family and get ready for the next day. And oh my gosh, yeah, you're yeah. absolutely right. And you know, to your point about the mental exhaustion, when a parent is already mentally exhausted and they're off, the school is offering something like a workshop in English and they really want to go learn it, that's another layer of that mental exhaustion.
Right.
It's like, oh my gosh, and I have to go and really concentrate porque no entiendo muy bien el inglés, you know, I can't right. understand it very well. And so like, there's so many challenges, and all of those stigmas of, oh, these parents just don't care, comes from a lack of understanding of their diverse population. So instead, I think if we were more intentional on, like say at schools, and parents have, you know this, they have the power of their voice, but it's not being utilized enough or at all sometimes. So you were mentioning earlier, like, yeah, you have to think of curriculum, how to tie the new curriculum into Common Core and all that. And so one of the easiest things that I think teachers and parents can implement bullying education with homework is by being selective of certain materials like books.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you need a list of anti-bullying or empathy or kindness books or diversity books, you let me know. I have a ton, very, very long list of all different reading levels. But parents have accessibility to digital things like Hoopla, which is an electronic book borrowing system. Well, not just books, but CDs, movies, and all. You just tie in your library card to that app and you can borrow books. So, you know, if you're saying, oh, I don't have time to take my kids to the library, try Hoopla. There's also that some libraries where you order the books online and you just go and pick them up real quick and come back home. I mean, I know some places are opening too, but it's all a matter of how intentional do you want to be to educate yourself about bullying awareness and prevention, and be real with yourself, like whether you're a teacher, an administrator, or a parent. Is it that you don't have time or is it that you're not making time?
Yeah, finite decision in terms of
And I'm not saying do this every single day of your life. I'm saying at least once a month, be intentional about either watching a movie that teaches about it or a TV show or a book, and then have conversations at the dinner table with your kids. And one of the most fun ways that kids just love, because you know, when you make it about them, they just start blurting everything out. But one of the things I've always practiced since my two kids who are now 13 and 15, since they were little, I always ask them at the dinner table, because you know, we have that in nuestra cultura, unless your parents are coming home really late and you can't have dinner at the table, ask your children, what are three things that you loved about today? And you know, everybody takes a turn. And then what are three things that you really did not like about today? And then the last question should be something like, if you could change one thing about today, what would it be and why? And the reason I ask those questions that way is because children have such a hard time articulating, you know, whatever happens. Sometimes it's because they just don't have the vocabulary, or sometimes because they're too confused about too many emotions. So if when they answer, oh, these are my three favorite things and these were my three least things, but then nothing, you know, came up during those answers. But then the last one, like, what would you change about your day if you could and why? I've actually cut things on that last one with my kids, and they were like, oh, well, my friend so-and-so, she did this to me. I'm like, oh, you don't say. And tell me more. What happened? Right. How did you feel about it? And it's so surprising how much they'll share, especially if you just sit down and just listen. If you're prompted to give advice or say, hey, I'm here for you, just let them finish first. And sometimes you might have to wait until the next day to come back and say, hey, you know, you mentioned that this was going on with your friend yesterday. You know, something like that happened to me when I was little, and this is how I handled it. Do you think you could do something like that? You know, make it soft, because when you're kind of like, come here, let me tell you how you're going to defend yourself, they're like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have said anything.
Right.
Like, now I feel weird. This is uncomfortable. I don't want to talk about it. And they'll sit there and stare at you, but in their mind, they're like, oh my gosh, I just want this to end. And they're not listening.
Right. It becomes a defense mechanism where they just shut down. Cause like, it's like, what's it called? Fight or flight, right?
Yeah.
Right. Where it's just like, do I really have to go this route? Or like this is, cause this is awkward. And then, I think you touched upon it, but one of my last questions was, how can we uplift the Latinx community to have healthy conversations about bullying? And like, one of the things I garnered from what you were saying is, listen with intentionality, right? And then that allows for these fluid conversations to flourish. And it allows for, I want to say, a deeper understanding of where, you know, maybe your child or your students are having these issues, right? And then that allows for, like, you know, peer mediation or, like, you know, healthy problem solving, because, like, there are some problem solving methods that are brought up that aren't healthy. But, like, you know, conversations always save, I want to say, relations, like, whether it be, you know, in terms of, like, your own child or your students. Like, I always find that having a restorative kind of conversation between two parties after, you know, they really, like, kind of hash the issue, what is the root problem of this? And I've seen it happen in this one school that particularly did it well, where it was after those conversations happened, they weren't friends, the two parties, but at least they were let bygones be bygones, and they can, you know, be about their day. There was no longer a conflict.
Go ahead, finish your sentence.
Oh no, it was just beautiful to see. And, like, I think it proves to your point that as long as we listen with intent, therefore the words that we say next are gonna be heard.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you repeat the question again? Sorry.
Oh, yeah, sure. So how can we uplift the Latinx community to have healthy conversations about bullying?
So I would say we have to stop thinking of it as a shameful experience, because it happens to us all. It really does. Some people... I asked them, have you ever been bullied? And oh, never, ever, never in my life. I'm like, that's hard to believe, because there's a lot of a-holes out there, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when you become an adult, people just feel like, oh, I have the right to say this to you, however, you know? And if it didn't happen to you, it has happened to somebody close to you. So let's stop saying it's not happening, because it is happening.
Right.
And when it happens, never, ever, ever tell the victim, what did you do? You know, because that immediately right there, you just put the blame on that child or that person. You just, you know, just ask, instead of saying, the first thing you should say is, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry this happened to you. You know what? I love you. I'm here for you. That's how you uplift one another. If you see a parent that's going through that, it's like, hey, I heard what happened. That is horrible. I'm here for you. And don't be judgmental. Let's leave that judgment, that gossiping culture behind.
Right.
Because that may, even when you know, like that something happened, like, oh, mira, Maria le pegaron. It's like the way that you're saying it, you know, it's like, oh, that's juicy gossip. Let's talk about this, instead of like, oh my gosh, did you hear that? Maria got assaulted. That's horrible. How can we help her? How can we help our kids from not being the next target? You know, so let's uplift each other that way. And if you can't afford to say hire a anti-bullying coach like me, or if you can't afford to make it to the school's free anti-bullying workshop, then you know what? Make it a point to have the conversations with other family. Don't just keep that in your immediate family, in your nuclear family.
Right.
Talk to the grandparents, because grandparents are being left behind on this. And especially con nuestra cultura, the grandparents are usually taking care of the kids and sometimes being the ones going into those parent-teacher conferences. Educate the grandparents too about this, because they need to be allies too. Our kids need allies, not just for, you know, the right type of education, but for, you know, advocacy to keep them safe. So, I mean, we have so much technology, so much access to online now. And if you want to educate yourself about anything, go to YouTube, go to Instagram, heck, follow my page. I give free advice on there, you know. Follow anybody who is giving you that information for free.
Right.
Until you can afford to pay for it if you want the more in-depth version of it. That's how you uplift. And every time you see a good post about something, you have like all these brothers and sisters with nieces and nephews, mandaselos. Just share that.
Right.
Because people will usually never even think of having that conversation until you share a little tiny snippet of it. And that's right. How you can get that conversation going.
Right. Before we go, I want you to plug in your website, your Instagram, so people can, you know, if they can, get your products and, you know, follow you and get, you know, this information out there, because it's much needed, especially in our community.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So my website is dalitalks.com. And just because you're going to see everything in English there, don't be afraid. I do have a lot, everything in Spanish, like the courses. I have a workbook on there in English and Spanish, and it's available. Just send me a DM and you can follow me on Instagram. My handle is @DaliTalks, and that's D-A-L-I, T as in Tom, A-L-K-S. And let's see what else. I'm also on Clubhouse. I host rooms where I talk about this, but not just about anti-bullying, but the diversity part and other parenting topics like consent, which is a big thing that we also don't talk about in our mm-hmm. culture, you know, so and much more. So that's where you can reach out to me. And I, through my website, you can book a coaching call and let's see if we can work together. I'd be very happy to help you, whether you speak English or Spanish or both.
Absolutely. Well, Dali, I want to thank you for being such a great guest. And I hope to do this again on the First Gen Teacher Lens podcast.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having listened to the First Gen Teacher's Lens. We'll see you here next time.